Hello, and welcome to River Writers, a production of the Writers Guild of Astoria, a 501c3 nonprofit supporting writers and the literary arts in Astoria and the Lower Columbia region. I'm your host, Marianne Monson. Aired the second Monday of each month at 9 a.m., River Writers provides a chance to peek behind the curtain at the craft of writing. I'm so pleased to have in the studio with me today a Kathlamet-based poet, Dale Olson, and she is the author of a new chapbook poetry collection called From the Dead Letter Department. Welcome to the studio, Dale.
Oh, thanks, Marianne. It's a joy to be here.
So fun to have you here, and I just want to mention for our listeners that you and I were last in the studio together for the inaugural episode of River Writers 2 years ago.
Oh, that's right. And I can't believe it's been 2 years.
I know. Me too.
And we both look so much younger even than we did then.
So much younger. We just keep getting younger.
The years are just rolling back.
Rolling back. Pretty soon we're going to be back in high school.
Yeah.
Amazing. So, yeah, and the River Writers show was your brainchild, and we at the board at the Writers Guild were having a retreat up at the beautiful Sou'wester Lodge, and you said, I think one thing we could do as a literary arts nonprofit would be to have a radio show on KMUN.
Yeah, it was that brilliant idea that when it popped out of my mouth, then your response was, great. Can you please, you know, take a lead with that and make a proposal? So, yeah, beware of when you speak up, you know, for proposing ideas, because oftentimes then it becomes your baby.
Yeah.
But I'm delighted that it happened, that it, you know, all unfolded the way it did. I love that River Writers is still going, and I love that it, you know, it gives people in our community a chance to hear from writers in our area that they might not hear from otherwise.
No, it's really taken on a life of its own since that first proposal, and you had radio experience, but I really didn't. And so we wrote the proposal and turned it in, and then they said, yes, we want to do this, and then we had to go through training to try and figure it out. But you were ahead of the game because you'd been around radio before.
Yeah, back in the dark ages, in the early 80s. And I have to say, before our show was like getting ready to launch on the air, and we were supposed to have like a theme music to introduce our program. And I was just like in a panic because I didn't have anything like that, because you don't want to infringe on any copyright laws of anything that's out there existing. And I remember just visiting with my dad in Tacoma and saying, oh my gosh, we don't have music for our show. And I'm like, hey, wait a minute, Dad, you write music and play guitar. And he's like, yeah. And so he just like on the spot, you know, played one of his songs for me. And I just, you know, made an audio file on my phone. And that's our theme music.
That is our theme song.
It's my dad.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. Keep it all in the family. That's what we do in small towns, right? We know a person.
Yeah. And he received absolutely no compensation except just the satisfaction of knowing that his music is living on in the airwaves of Astoria.
He gets to be famous on Coast Community Radio.
Exactly.
Right here.
And that should be enough for anybody.
That should be enough for anybody. I agree. Yeah. So, well, it just seems like just very full circle to have you on for the second anniversary of River Writers. So, and there's been just a lot of wonderful conversations, and we should just give a shout out to the archives, because KMUN has put all of that content onto Apple Podcasts now, I believe. So
it's just a treasure trove.
Yes.
And we're just so lucky to have KMUN in our community, and giving us this vehicle, not just our program, but so much great programming.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, maybe we should just touch on a couple of our favorite episodes while we're thinking about it. Like, so you and I did the very first inaugural episode. My first interview was with Israel Nebaker, and that intimidated the heck out of me.
Well, you had a lot of stars in your eyes for that one.
I'm a big fan of his music. And I have to say, that episode with Israel, he played a song that didn't make it onto their new album. So the only recording I'm aware of that beautiful song is from that River Riders episode.
I remember listening to that show.
Yeah.
And I was crying.
I was crying
when he was playing that song.
Yeah.
Because it was so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And just that whole interview was really just, it was so intimate. I mean, it was just like you were sitting, as a listener, I felt like I was right in the room with this just very intimate conversation that was going on. Then he just, you know, played that song. And I was just like, wow, how lucky are we to have that, you know, just right here.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I think it really affirmed to me just the connection across creative mediums, you know, regardless. And there's so many people creating in this town in so many different ways, you know, and we limit this show to writers, but there's actually a lot of different ways to write.
Yeah.
Music is certainly one of them.
Yeah. I think my favorite interview that I did was, it was two writers from the Long Beach Peninsula, David Campiche and James Tweedy. And they came in together because they're very good friends. And they had written, they'd co-written a book of poetry collection together. And that was like having monkeys like loose in the studio. It's like I could barely control what was happening. And not that they were wild or out of control, but they just had so much they both wanted to say. And when they kind of got rolling, I was watching the time for our show, and it was like, oh, the time was out the window. I just could barely rein them back in. And David Campiche was he was making revisions on the poem that he was about to read on the air,
you know, right here in KMUN studio.
And for me, that was like just so quintessential poet in action. We're always in that revision process and always looking at our work and saying, oh, you know, I could use a better word here, or I could rephrase this. And he was just on the fly changing up the poem that was already printed in their bound collection.
Yeah.
And I find that too. Now that I've got my own published collection, that I'm looking at stuff and going, oh, I wish I would have used this word instead of this word. And
right.
But it's done. It's it's in print now.
Yeah, it's in print. So it's frozen at a specific moment in time, but that's not to keep you from reading it slightly differently when you do live performances, right? It's just like how people go and appreciate live music performed, because it's slightly different than the studio recordings.
So.
Well, speaking of which, I have this beautiful chat book in front of me called From the Dead Letter Department with Moonstone Press, just hot off the press, right?
Yes, just arrived. It's brand new.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, congratulations. Your first,
it's a long time coming.
Published poetry collection, and it's just lovely.
Oh, thanks, Marianne.
And Moonstone Press is based out of Philadelphia, right?
Right. They're a nonprofit arts organization that's been supporting poets and their efforts to get published for about 40 years. They're a wonderful organization. And they, you know, for anyone who's out there who's writing poetry and who's trying to, you know, break through with like a first publication or a chapbook, Moonstone Press does sponsor a chapbook contest annually. And so I'm pretty sure that this manuscript that I submitted to them, I submitted it in the fall. So if you're on submittable, you can, you know, kind of watch for it, or you can just go to the moonstonearts.org website and check to see what their submission schedule is for that annual chapbook contest, because they really put an emphasis on publishing poets who have not been published before. And the person who was the judge for this, the 2024 contest, which I submitted to, is a very respected poet. She's Natalie Anderson. She's English, from the English department of Swarthmore College, and is you know, very well respected. And I mean, I felt like to have someone of that caliber reading my work and deciding that it was worthy of an honorable mention in their contest, mm-hmm. And worthy of publication. I mean, that's a huge affirmation for me.
Yeah.
But anytime you submit to a contest or just to a publication with an individual poem, you have to remember that it's so subjective. I mean, the person who's reading your work, you know, your work may really resonate with them or it may not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that you keep that in mind when you get all of those rejection notices. And that manuscript that I sent out for this particular chapbook, that's probably the fourth iteration of that particular manuscript. And that one, it was that fourth time that I took it, you know, sent it out to several different places. You know, I had gotten some wonderful feedback from a judge on another contest who, even though it was a rejection, said this poem, which became the title poem for that collection, that the judge said this poem is very strong and it made my long list. And I think you should work on it some more. It's not quite there. Mm-hmm. So even getting, you know, a rejection that has a little bit of encouragement in it or a little bit of direction was enough to kind of spur me on to do this fourth version of the manuscript and to make that poem my title poem in the collection. And also I was more brutal on that fourth manuscript too, with taking out poems that I knew were not that strong.
Yeah. So you really pared it back, you know, and I think that's, you said several things that are really, really helpful for writers, especially in earlier stages of their career. But when I was working at the publishing house as an editor, I became aware of what a small percentage of work actually gets published and how kind of the next tier of the ones that we almost published but didn't, like just how incredibly high caliber and what really an honor it is to make it to that level. And so I think some people who receive those, what we would call like personal rejection letters, don't recognize how close they are. Mm-hmm. And yes, it is a rejection letter, so that's easy to feel discouraged, but you have made it into the top, you know, 10%,
right,
or 5%, you know, and mm-hmm. so honestly, if you're getting those personal rejection letters, just keep going. It's only a matter of time before you get a yes.
Yeah. So, and those can be gold.
Yeah.
Those can be gold. And also, I have to say that this, I was really expecting just to receive another batch of rejection letters, mm-hmm. Even from this fourth version of the manuscript that I sent around last fall. And I wasn't expecting any yeses. Mm-hmm. And, But early this year, in March, I was at the Big River Book Festival, mm-hmm. at Little Island Creamery on Puget Island. And I remember just hearing someone say, you know, you don't wait for someone to publish your work. If you, you know, really want your work out there, you know, it's so hard to get through. It's so hard to get your work looked at and to get an acceptance to be published. Mm-hmm. If that's not happening, but you're ready, then you should just, you know, you should just take the bull by the horns and publish yourself. Mm-hmm. And I remember just in that moment feeling like, that's what I'm going to do. I'm mm-hmm. going to just wait for all the rejection letters, that the whole slew to come through. Once I've received all those rejections, then I am clear and I can just self-publish and I'm not going to wait for somebody to say it's good enough.
Right, right.
Because I had told my mother, who is in full-time care and in hospice care actually now, I had told her at the beginning of the year, Mom, I am going to put a published bound you know, collection of my poetry in your hands before the end of the year. I mean, I just made that promise to her, not knowing how I would accomplish that. And then in March at that festival, I just said it out loud. I'm doing it this year. Yeah. I am doing it, you know, somehow. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how that was going to happen, but it's like I just said it out loud and made that commitment to myself and to some fellow poets that were kind of standing nearby, that I was, you know, I was committed to seeing this happen. And honestly, it was like the next month that I received the acceptance letter from Moonstone Press saying, you know, congratulations, you're an honorable mention. And I was like, what? There must be some mistake.
No mistake. But I love that you set that intention and you said it out loud and you made a plan.
Yeah.
But aren't you glad that you didn't just skip to self-publishing, but you gave yourself time to see if it would, you know, work as a published manuscript? So
I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that it worked out that way.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot to be said for having someone outside of yourself, give it the green light. And, you know, and I didn't pay to have it published. You know, they absorbed the cost of that. And so, you know, it's a huge honor. It's not an easy gate to get through.
No, it's not. But it's worth it. And it's definitely doable. Like, I've seen you over the last several years watching your poetic journey. I've seen how hard you've worked at revising and writing new material and learning from so many, you know, gifted authors and poets, and really, you know, taking the time to learn that craft and to practice it.
I think the best thing any poet can do, if they're serious about, you know, writing good poetry, is spending time with other poets and listening to their work, paying attention to what makes their poetry strong, why it sticks with you after you've heard it. You know, if you're still thinking about a poem or a last line from a poem, you know, a day or two after you've heard it, well, there's a reason for that, and you should be examining that and trying to, you know, replicate that in your own writing. So being around other poets, you know, attending open mics like the Rick's open mic here in Astoria, the Kath Lammett Writers Open Mic at River Mile 38, and then also just participating in, you know, poetry and writing workshops when you have that opportunity to be, you know, as a student, you know, listening to the wisdom of people that are writing and are being published, and paying attention to what they know because they've already cut the path. And it's, you know, there's just, I've just been so blessed. I mean, with the friends that I've made here on the Lower Columbia, like Florence Sage and Robert Michael Pyle. Those two especially have been huge influencers and mentors to my poetry. And they've been just huge encouragers and supporters of what I'm doing, too. So, you know, you need those people in your life to let you know that you're on the right track, you are getting better. That's the thing. You just don't want to stay stagnant and, you know, assume that, you know, just because you wrote it, it's
how
good.
It is. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And then also I would have to say, encourage people who are writing poetry or writing, well, poetry especially, to look into joining a literary organization like the Writers Guild. And also the Oregon Poetry Association is a wonderful organization. You don't have to be a resident of Oregon to be part of that organization. And so all of their, you know, their annual conference and things that they sponsor are really just geared towards poets. And so I'm so thrilled really to be part of that organization as a member,
right?
Because it's putting me in contact with a lot of other people,
yeah,
kind of writing better than me,
mm-hmm.
at my level.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. You want to be around people that are writing better than you, because yep. it gives you something to aspire to.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. Absolutely. And you can learn from folks who are a little bit ahead. And yeah, the Writers Guild, we are offering spring retreats now. We have the Fall Creative Writing Festival, and there's always something related to poetry. We try to cross all the genres, but this year we happen to have Oregon Poet Laureate Ellen Waterston, which we're really excited about.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, we can't wait for that. And we're doing online writing groups too. Mostly Asher is leading them for us. So there's lots of opportunities to get involved. To go back to your collection, so you mentioned Natalie Anderson, who was the Chet Book Contest judge. I just wanted to read her little write-up on the back of the chat book. It says, "These poems balance absence and loss, debility and danger against the compensating beauty and serenity of the natural world. In their limpid matter-of-factness, these poems comfort and sustain."
Yeah, those are really wonderful. It's a wonderful way that she has summarized, you know, just kind of the essence of that collection.
Yeah. What a beautiful tribute that she made to your collection. Yeah. I'm wondering if you can read us a few poems from it.
Well, sure. I'll read the title poem. And, you know, these poems are really influenced so much by just what it means to live here on the Lower Columbia,
mm-hmm.
and to live close to the ocean, and to all of the birds and animals and trees and the river, all of those things that we're just blessed to be surrounded by mm-hmm. every day. And so that's a huge influence on my writing. And this particular collection, I have to say also, has a huge influence from the events personally, you know, with my mom,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, just, you know, confronting as an adult kind of that parent-child relationship as it's kind of comes to the natural end of its life.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you have a close relationship with a parent who is dying, it does, you know, it can be it can be a grieving process that goes on long before, you know, that parting actually happens.
Yeah.
Which is something I, you know, wasn't really prepared for. So this is the title poem from the Dead Letter Department. You left no forwarding address at the post office. Correspondence flutters skyward, along with prayers from roadside saints, imploring you to reveal your location. Some nights I mother myself, as you once did, hold my hair out of the basin, press a warm cloth to my streaked face. The moon manages to find her way in the dark. She walks the same footpath nightly without map or handrail. I have no memory of childhood fevers or your cool hand on my forehead, yet I know it was you. Wherever you are, I'm sure your handwriting is still terrible. Please write back.
Hmm. Beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
That. I love how you include the little detail about, I'm sure your handwriting is still terrible. Like, it's just kind of this, in the middle of this poem, I think with grief, there tends to be this inclination to just make everything perfect in the memory of right. someone that we've loved. Like you read obituaries and right. things that people write online about people afterwards. And from reading those, you would think that person was absolutely perfect. Like they were just like an angel walking around. Right. And sometimes when I read those, I'm like, I wonder if that person knew you felt this way about them when they were actually alive, you know?
Yeah, like, but unable to do any wrong.
Yeah. But I love that you bring in the like bad handwriting because it's just such a like a mundane, I mean, it's not really a flaw, but it gives us this grounding detail that immediately makes us trust you as a writer a little bit more to tell us the true story, you know?
Thank you for picking up on that. Mm. But it was, my mom is in that poem.
Yeah.
And she has terrible handwriting. And so, I mean, I wanted to really pay tribute to her, you know, as a whole person, you know, mm-hmm. and an imperfect person.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that, you know, I as a poet, I think we look for ways to wrap up a poem. How do I want to end this poem so that it has impact and so that it is not a trite ending or a predictable ending. And so that's one thing I really have looked to do as I've grown as a poet is to look for ways to make the ending of each poem unpredictable to the reader or the listener, because you don't want the person listening to your poem or reading your poem to be able to fill in that final line before they get to it.
Right, right.
You want it to surprise them. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I learned at the knee of Bob Pyle and Florence Sage. I mean, mm-hmm. that was something key that I took away from a poetry workshop that they co-led. In fact, that might have been my first Writers Guild workshop that I attended here in Astoria. I think it was.
And it was at the Astoria Studio Collective Space, I think, right?
Yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. It was. And I was very new to the area, and I was, you know, kind of awestruck to be in that space with two poets that I already admired. And but that was a huge thing that I took away from that workshop was to surprise your reader to have something fresh and unexpected at the end of your poem.
Yeah.
So
often called a turn. And I think as a fiction writer, you know, it's all connected. It's like you don't want to be able to predict the end of a novel when you open it either. You know, you want to have an idea of where you think it's going, and then you kind of want to be wrong.
Yeah, because what's the point of reading it if you already
can just see?
I mean, unless it's like a history
thing
where you know that the Americans won the Revolutionary War or whatever.
Well, and that's the funny thing is you want it to feel surprising and yet inevitable. So you don't want it to be like I'm reading nonfiction and vampires show up. Like that's not the kind of surprise we're going for, right?
Yeah,
usually. But you want this turn, and then we've landed in a place that is surprising, fresh, and new, and yet somehow so inevitable.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that is just beautiful. And so briefly tell our listeners where they can find this chapbook.
They can go to moonstonearts.org. And they have an online store.
You should be able to find out information about those readings through the Writers Guild newsletter, too, I think.
It really is. It's a joy to meet people who, who are interested enough in what you're writing that they want, you know, they want to be able to take part of it home with them.
Absolutely. Yep. And just keep expanding that literary community that we're so lucky to have here.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, listeners, for joining us today on River Writers. And thank you again, Dale, for joining me today. Writers Guild of Astoria is a 501c3 nonprofit organization promoting literary arts and serving writers in the Lower Columbia region. You can learn more and become a member at thewritersguild.org. I'm Marianne Monson for River Writers.